Good morning. This is Talk Radio. I'm Marianne Barisonic, and today I have two guests. Carrie Crofton is joining us by phone, and David Morrison is here in the studio. Carrie Crofton is the author of Wireless Radiation Rescue, which looks at how wireless devices affect our health and how we can protect ourselves from them. And David Morrison lives here in Portland, and he's fighting the placement of a cell tower near Mount Tabor Middle School right here in Portland. Dave, thanks for coming in.
Sure, my pleasure.
So let's talk a little bit about this cell tower in near Mount Tabor Middle School. What kind of tower is it, and why do you believe that it's a problem?
Well, it's a 93-foot tower they're proposing, and the company is Clear. It's not just a cell tower. These are actually microwave weapons. And
that's a pretty strong statement, microwave weapons. Why do you say that?
Well, the health effects that have been confirmed from the same frequencies of microwaves that are used by these towers.
Now, this is like microwave oven?
It's similar frequency. And the health effects essentially are those that would be caused by a microwave weapon.
Okay, and I believe we have Carrie Crofton on the phone. Good morning.
Yes, good morning.
So, Carrie, I've got Dave Morrison here, and he just called the Clear Tower that's going to go up by the school a microwave weapon. That's pretty strong language.
Or a cancer tower.
Or a cancer tower. Okay. And Carrie, I guess you've got a pretty solid scientific background.
Well, I have just spent the last several years researching this issue and have brought together many of the world's leading scientists who have been working in this area for many years. And there is concern because there is evidence that this microwave radio frequency wireless radiation has been shown to cause significant biological harm at levels a fraction below what the national and international government standards consider safe.
Okay. Carrie, maybe you and Dave, can you give us some examples of peer-reviewed papers that have shown significant damage?
Well, there's a study by Henry Lai, who's did the first study that confirmed DNA damage from microwave exposure, and that has been replicated many times, and it's sort of the standard study that most people refer to when they first start talking about this. Magda Havas in Canada at, I believe, Trent University has recently done many studies, that one of which shows the effect of on blood sugar of microwave radiation. And that, I don't believe it's up for peer review now. And many of her studies are very widely respected, and are showing effects on the heart and all sorts of different biological systems.
Okay, Carrie, are those the main studies that you would cite?
Yes, David's right, and he's clearly done his research on this, and I just want to say, going into this, I feel for you, David. As a parent, we are so concerned and so dedicated to protecting our children. And yes, I know this wireless radiation is everywhere, but when you see something like this going up near your child's school, I invite other listeners who may not feel so strongly about this to be open to listening, because there is evidence, and certainly Dr. Henry Lai's work on the DNA damage and disruption of DNA repair is pivotal. There's also, also what Dr. Havas is doing, there's also been shown to be leakage of the protective blood-brain barrier. This was done by a neurologist, Dr. Leif Salford.
And that's is that cell phone towers, or is that for use on cell phone where you've got the phone up to your ear?
That initially, that was, yes, from cell phone radiation. Now, remember, this is the same same kind of electromagnetic radiation. Obviously, when you hold a cell phone up to your ear, it's extremely powerful, and that's why, you know, speaking of cell phones or mobile phones, it's strongly encouraged to limit calls and keep it away from your head and your body. But with cell towers, the problem is that these are always radiating, always emitting. And yes, depending on how many antennas are on the tower, you know, the tower is just the structure that holds up the antennas, and there can be many transmitters on one tower. They are always radiating, and at the levels, you know, maybe it's a 50th of a cell phone radiation, we're not sure, but these effects, including cognitive functions, reaction time, increased agitation, sleep disruption, cardiac effects, all of these have been shown to happen at a fraction of what the government regs are.
Okay, and this is Talk Radio, so we'll be taking calls in a little bit. The phone number, so you can get ready to call in with your questions for Carrie Crofton and Dave Morrison here, the phone number is 503-231-8187. Now, the cognitive effects, the sleep disruption, what studies did that come from? From what I've heard, okay, the lye study was DNA damage, and you said that that's been replicated. I guess I'm a little skeptical of that one because of the studies that came out saying that LSD caused DNA damage, that caffeine caused DNA damage. And so I there's enough things to worry about out there. And I'm just wondering, is the cell phones, the wireless, is this something we really have to worry about? What studies came out with the cognitive problems and the sleep disorders?
There's a series of researchers that have looked into the cognitive Muscular from Austria, Shiner from Germany, Lai, Becker, Cherry, I'm reading you the list, Luria, there's a list of people that have had these findings.
Now, if people want to look into this, do you have a website where they can go and get more information?
I do. It's called radiationrescue.org.
I also have a website. It's called wirelesswatchblog.com, and it also refers you to several links on the left, which go to those studies. And there's some very hard-hitting pieces by a woman named Amy Worthington, who doesn't pull any punches on this stuff.
And Marianne, I agree with you, and this is what, you know, my background is in health education. Actually, I used to work in cardiac clinics doing cardiac education. So I know that we don't want to just scare people further into denial. And it is very difficult for people to realize that this technology is everywhere, but that there is significant evidence of harm. And one of the key factors is, which I outlined in the book, is the disparity between where these effects have been shown, whether Dr. Lai's, the damage to DNA, Dr. Salford, the leakage of the blood-brain barrier. These have happened at fractions of a level of what is allowed by the regs. So there's also something, and David probably has a link to the Bioinitiative report. This was an international team of leading scientists and cancer specialists who looked at the biological effects, certainly within the levels that would be emitted from these kind of tower antennas, transmitters, as well as the Wi-Fi network the schools have, and often in our homes, most homes. So they are calling for the government regulations to be brought in line with the science. So I empathize with parents fighting this. I'm 100% supportive. One of the contributors to our book, an electrical engineer in the United Kingdom, said the last place you would want to put a cell tower antenna, they call them masts there for people doing research, is anywhere near a school. And there is evidence, there are some studies that show the proximity to these antennas have increased cancer risk. There was a German study that showed, over a period of 10 years, now these people, it was 400 meters, which is about 1,300 feet, cancer was increased threefold. A study out of Israel, Tel Aviv University, also showed within that approximate radius. Studies in Australia, the UK, and Italy have found proximity with a significant increase in leukemia, depending on how close you are, you know, to these transmitters. So the science is there.
And how close would this cell tower be to the Mount Tabor Middle School?
It would basically be adjacent to the play yard, so it would be right on top of these kids. Also, there's a school in Bayville, New York, at this moment, is preparing a lawsuit because 30 students and staff have come down with cancer and leukemia. There's a school in California, La Quinta Middle School, which has a similar situation. All over the world, you're seeing schools and neighborhoods that where cancer clusters are cropping up from their proximity to these cell towers.
And there's been no, it seems, we're not hearing about this at all.
It's a $4 trillion industry worldwide. And if you look at who owns the media, especially in the United States, we have no media here. We don't hear about this except if we go out and look for the information. There have been several actually high-profile articles, one in GQ, one in Prevention, I think one
Harper's. There was
Harper's.
One in Harper's.
Okay, Harper's.
Yeah.
And
I'd like to add to that, David, and I share your concern because I've been working very hard to get the word out, as well as so many of the experts that have contributed to this work that I'm doing in this protection plan that we've developed. I've done, maybe 30 media interviews, so. Yes, we're not hearing about this as much as we should, but, Larry King, for example, has had a few shows on, had some of the leading experts, ABC News, CBS News. So there is some, but it is difficult. He's absolutely right for people to get this information. And the media often, as we know, good journalists wants to present both sides of a story. So often they'll bring somebody from the industry or somebody from a government regulation agency, and they will all say, these levels of emissions of this microwave radiation fall well within the national and international standards. So this is why so many people, including the authors of the Bioinitiative report, say we simply must bring these regulations and safety levels within the range of the science so that our children and us are being protected.
Okay, and what we're going to open up the phone lines now. Joanne, good morning.
Yes, good morning. I appreciate the program, and I know a lot of people don't want to hear ugly realities, but anyway, I'm glad you're on the air. And I just want to ask one of you, here's my daughter and children and my situation. We're low-income disabilities, alone in the world, no car, and they've taken away most of the pay phones for us to communicate with. So I want to stay away from cell phones, but our reality is real. So is there any kind of honest protection, if you have to use cell phones, to protect your head from this radiation that maybe low-income people can afford? But anyway, I don't want to put a burden on you, but I'm glad you're having the program. I know you're going to meet a lot of resistance probably. And this blood brain. I've heard about this. What does that look like in our head or our body? Anyway, there's a lot I wanted to say, but I better just get off the air and listen to you. And I thanks for your bravery and that and your honesty. Goodbye.
Okay, thanks for the call, Joanne.
Was that Joanne?
Yes.
Could I answer?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, Joanne, I really hear your concern and share your concern. It is a problem that pay phones are coming out. But I really encourage you, if you can budget, to keep your landline in your home. And not only keep your landline, but if it's a cordless phone, go back to a corded landline. Because the new cordless phones, the 5.8, the 6.0, and this is for anyone who's concerned about this issue at all, is that the base of these are always radiating. It's like these antenna transmitters. And in fact, some of the experts say having these in your home is like having a mini cell tower antenna radiating all the time. And so when you're out and you need to be using your cell phone, use a lower, not as fancy, don't surf the net and watch movies. Get a simple one with a speaker phone. Keep it powered off whenever possible. Don't keep it powered on and holding on your body, and really limit your calls.
Okay.
Don't put it in your pocket.
Oh. Okay, and we're going to take another caller now. Good morning, Joe.
Oh, hi. See, I just wanted to say in the, I think it was Life Extension Magazine, and it was, I believe, either the May or March of 2006 issue. I don't have a subscription to it, but I just happened to pick one up at a newsstand one day because I saw the front cover article about it. But it said that a cell phone technology was developed by the Department of Defense back in the 60s. It was never, they abandoned it, and then some so-called entrepreneurs got a hold of the technology. It was never tested for safety. They also said that if you are going to carry a cell phone, don't carry it on your waistband, because it said 85% of your red blood cells are made in your hip bone area, in your bone marrow, and that it interferes with that. It also said that if you hold a cell phone up to your head, it takes about a minute to 2 minutes for it to open up your blood-brain barrier. And one other thing I heard is most of your home cordless phones are about 10 times more powerful, just a different frequency range than your cell phone. But, yeah, cell phones are... the whole technology has never been tested for safety, and I believe that most of the... information about the dangers of it have been suppressed by the evil empire, you know. So it's a bunch of heinous people that are pushing this technology that's been around for, you know, how long. But and I didn't know. I just heard that about the. I knew the home phones, your cordless phones were pretty bad. I didn't know that it was the newer ones were even worse than the old ones as far as the bass. And I'm speaking to you now on one right now, a cordless phone, but I've got it on a speakerphone, and I've got it about 2 feet away from my face. But how dangerous are these new cordless phones? And the lady was, I can't remember what her name was there, was just talking about it.
Carrie Crofton.
I've done tests with a professional radio frequency meter, although I'm not a technical expert myself.
Right.
But I can tell you that the readings from particularly the 6.0, the base of them is like a microwave oven on, and they are as long as, you know, they're radiating for maybe 20, 30 feet at
wow.
a very high level. So I encourage anyone who's listening, you want to reduce your family's exposure and risks, is yes, we have to fight these cell tower antennas. It's absolutely outrageous that they're considering putting one so close to those children in the school. And while we're doing that, we really need to take a look at reducing the level of exposure in our own homes. And that part of the plan we developed was, as you say, going back to the older cordless phones. If you have to have a cordless phone, go to a garage sale, see if you can find the older ones, the 900 megahertz.
Yeah.
They only radiate when you're actually on the phone.
Oh.
The new ones radiate all the time. And also, I really encourage people, go back to hardwired internet access in your home. Take out your wireless network.
Yeah, I don't even have a computer yet, but when I do get one, I'm definitely going to have it hardwired. And What the heck was the other thing I was going to tell you about? I forgot now. But anyway, as far as the cordless phones, it's 5.8 up higher than
the 2.4. When they started going digital,
they
radiate all the time. What you're looking for, the only ones that are considered moderately workable are the 900 megahertz.
Okay.
And but really go back to the corded landlines.
Yeah. One other thing I was going to tell you is I walk around most of the time with a little AM/FM pocket radio in my shirt pocket, and I could tell with my cell phone that it. One day I did a little experiment, and oh, by the way, if you walk into like Fred Meyer's, Safeway, any kind of a major grocery store nowadays, when you get up next to, if I'm listening to an AM radio, and AM seems to be more susceptible to outside interference, once you get anywhere near the checkout area where the cash registers are, it basically just zonks out your AM radio. It makes it so much noise, white noise, that you can't even hear what you're listening to. So most of the time I just pull the little earphone out of my ear because it's senseless to have it in my ear anymore. But I did the same little experiment one day with my cell phone about 5 years ago. And so now when I carry my cell phone around with me, I usually wear these pants that have like legs, pockets way down on the legs. And then I take like a little empty metal cigar box. And I know that this blocks about 99% of it out because I did a little experiment one day by taking the turning the cell phone with the antenna side, because it's got like a little bar antenna internally, and had that face in the little AM radio.
Okay.
And
well,
I held them once I got them about a foot apart, there was a lot of interference. And when I put the little metal tin can in between, like it's like a little cigar box.
All right. Hey, Joe.
It blocked it off really well. So I would recommend anybody out there, if you are going to carry a cell phone, carry it down in your pant legs, put a barrier between you and the phone, and keep it away from.
I would not carry it in your pant legs. There's been many studies that confirm sperm damage, lowered motility, sperm motility. And if you look at the rates of infertility now, they're going way up.
Yeah, but what I'm saying
I wanted to, excuse me, I wanted to add one thing here. You covered a lot of ground, and you're right. These all these products were never pre-market tested for safety, and that includes Wi-Fi, which is now in all of our schools. And this is a legal case that is going to be coming up locally very soon. The Portland Public School System will be sued for installing Wi-Fi in the schools.
Well, who's bringing that suit?
I am.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Something I would like to also mention, David, and again, I applaud you for taking this initiative, not only for your own child or children, but for all the children. And that is, I mean, yes, we have to proceed with the system that we've got. But also, I mean, just imagine, you know, if this was a chemical plant with the toxic fumes being put so close to a school, well, it would never get there. And the real challenge is that with this radiation, with this electro pollution, this, you know, toxic fumes in a sense, you can't see them. Most of us, you know, can't feel them. But there is evidence of harm. And isn't it interesting that, you know, I know in many schools there's big signs all over everywhere, you can't put anything that ever looked like a peanut in the school for, you know, obvious harm reasons. We would never consider putting asbestos in our schools. So that we have wireless radiation, these Wi-Fi networks, is one day we'll look back on this and we'll say, how on earth did we ever let this happen?
Okay, and we're going to go to another caller now. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning, Marianne. Thank you. That's chilling words and probably true. What I heard was from a British scientist who declared that cellular telephone technology. He said it's the biggest biological experiment in human history. God help us to even be around in that day to look back and say, what have we done? Fortunately, I have not made babies. I have no intention of making babies. And I pretty much keep any genes of mine to myself, except for hair that falls out on a pretty regular basis. I was wanted to express how what a fascinating and ironic conundrum we're in this, the most connected era in the history of humankind, and with the seduction of children themselves to say, look, this is where the world is going, to Facebook, to Twitter, to all these places. And we seduce the children into thinking maybe world peace can be achieved. Maybe this world brotherhood can be achieved. Maybe the small world Disneyland, aren't we special, could be achieved, when in fact we're killing ourselves. But the question that I had, besides the observations of how ironic and how doomed indeed humankind's destiny, maybe it's very doom, the question is, in relation to European studies I have heard of, at least anecdotal studies, if not double placebo-controlled, double-blind studies of this technology.
There is a question here, right?
In relation to the bees around the world and in Europe, European studies have indicated some connection to colony collapse disorder. I'll take my answer off the air. Thank
you,
Marianne.
Thank you, Jeff.
There have been some studies, I think, in India that apparently confirmed that radio frequency affects the homing instincts of bees, and also other animals as well. In fact, all biological systems, plants, trees, bats, everything are affected by radio frequency. The needles on pine trees are perfect little antennas, and some forest die-offs now are being blamed on radio frequency, as are some of the disappearance of bats.
Really? Where is this happening, the forest die-off?
Some of it's happening along the coast of California. There's in Colorado, there was I can't remember the name of the tree, but this is now being speculated that this has to do with radio frequency as well.
So, Carrie, is the colony collapse related to the radiation, you think?
There's certainly experts in this field who say there is, and there is a biological component explanation. You know, as David said, their ability to navigate is disruptive. The frequencies from this technology, it's a very jagged, pulsed wave. It's nothing like the natural electromagnetic radiation that we've lived in quite happily for eons. We're electrical beings ourselves, but the problem is that this radio frequency microwave radiation from these cell tower antennas, et cetera, they cause a disruption to how the cells communicate with each other. And as David said, what happens is that the bees lose their way, essentially, can't find their way back to the hive and starve. There's also some studies that came out. There was a radar station near Latvia that had pretty high exposures, and there was a Wolfgang Voldrut who linked the forest dieback to this microwave radiation, you know, rather than the acid rain. There's also researchers in Germany that have found similar. So I think I'd like to say here, again, as a health educator, we need to be mindful and aware, cautious here, that yes, we need to give people what I call the wireless wake-up call, but I think we have to be careful that we don't get people the feeling that we're doomed, that there's no way to turn this back, because there is. And at the end of the book, I asked all of the experts for their hope for the future. Now, I will admit, for some of them, it was a struggle. But all of them have come up with things that we can do, steps that we can take in our own homes and in our communities. We don't have to just grin and bear it. We can turn this around.
Okay, and we're going to take another caller now, and then it would be good if we could, after we take this caller, we'll get back to some of the steps that people can take in their homes. Good morning, John.
Hi. Hey, in my work, I drive around the metro area, the Portland metro area a lot, and recently I discovered in one suburban area there's a high school, and right across the street there's a junior high, and one of the light posts of the football field at the high school is a cell tower, and that's just a start. Just next to the main building of the high school, I think there's about a 90-foot cell tower, and then across the street at the site of junior high, there's also a 90-foot cell tower. I'm wondering how much money is in the this for the school district to have three huge cell towers right on the property where thousands of kids go to school each day. And I'll take my answer off the air.
David, do you have any idea?
I'm not really sure, but it depends on whether it's on the school property. The Portland City Council recently decided that they're not going to rent any more school property to the telecoms, although there are some that are existing now. I know that it's in the thousands of dollars a month per tower.
Okay, and
there would be, if I can add, there's no money that would make it worth for this. Something I'd like to say, and David, you might find this useful, on our website under advocacy, there's something called the Statement of Accountability that we wrote up, and this is something that would be used at a public meeting when they're considering installation of a cell tower antenna or mast, a transmitter. Now, we don't presume for a moment that anybody from the industry or a government agency would actually sign this, because we've asked them to confirm, you know, in their professional opinion, that this technology, that they have seen some evidence that this is safe. And we've asked them to state, you know, within, you know, what distance would this be considered safe for our children, for example. And there's evidence there of that they are forewarned, that they know. And, you know, maybe this will lead to litigation, but the statement of accountability, I would like people to take a look at. It could be useful for them.
I actually sent one of those. I didn't realize it was from your website. I sent one to each of the state school board members as well as the local school board by registered mail and haven't heard anything back from them.
Well, I encourage people to use them at a public meeting. And what we also did was we have on the second page of it sort of saying, you know, we have also given copies of this to the media, and we've asked them to follow up with you because there's strong community interest in this. So it really puts people on the spot. I mean, it's all very well for the industry people, you know, or their lawyers to come to these meetings and say, there is no evidence of harm. Even the, you know, the health officials will tell us this. Well, when our health is concerned and when our children's health is concerned, we'd like them to sign, to put their names down on this piece of paper. And no one so far has been willing to do that, but it does pose the question. If you're not willing to sign and say that you've seen evidence that this is safe, why should we have this for our children's health risks? And first of all, it shouldn't be up to us to prove that this technology is harmful. Surely it's up to them to prove that it's safe.
Okay. And I'm Marianne Barasonic. You're listening to Talk Radio. My guests today are Carrie Crofton, author of Wireless Radiation Rescue, and David Morrison, who is fighting a cell tower next to the Mount Tabor Middle School. Coming up later this morning on KBOO at 9 o'clock, on One Land, Many Voices, the topic is boycott, divestment, sanctions, strategies for ending the Israeli occupation. At 10 o'clock on Air Cascadia, hear about a stand of old-growth trees in the Deschutes National Forest that are slated to become the next No Growth Timber. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, David Lindorf, author of Killing Time, The Investigation into the Death Row Case of Momia Abu-Jamal, talks about new evidence in the case, and we hear an excerpt from a lecture by journalist Robert Fisk on lies, misreporting, and catastrophe. At 11, Die German Stunde talks about immigration, Germany and the U.S., how Germany and the U.S. are handling it or not. And so we're going to take another caller right now. Oh, and this is an anonymous caller. Good morning.
Good morning. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I hear you great.
Okay, so David, great job. What a warrior of light here. Amazing man. Got his stuff together. A couple little quickie points here. Lake Oswego High School, they have 3 or 4 cell towers right on their football field and next to their high school and their junior high. It's just out of control. I've never seen anything like it. It looks like a NASA military space station kind of thing. It's just out of control. And my question is not so much about the cell phones and all that stuff, but I'm a medical marijuana grower, and we have all these metal halide ballasts and these high-pressure sodium ballasts that light up these light bulbs to grow our medicine. Does anybody know about the EMFs that come from those? Because I have children that live in the house. I keep them, like, completely opposite of the house. But has anybody done any studies about the EMFs that are emitted from the ballast of these light fixtures? That was one of my questions. And I produce some cable television shows, and I'd like to, like, do a show about this if we wanted to do something on public access. So I'll take my answer and then maybe answer any questions that people have about that.
Okay, if you call the front desk after the show, we'll give you David Morrison's contact information. And David, do you know anything?
And also, would you give him my information, too, contact information? I'd be interested.
Okay, great.
Great.
I actually don't know specifically about those lights. I know that everything electrical gives off EMFs. There's problems with energy-saving technology. The refrigerators and the lights, and especially the screw-in light bulbs, are horrible. They give off a lot of radiation, and they push back on the wiring, which causes what's called electrosmog, which can be measured very easily with a meter, and you can purchase filters to mediate that electrosmog in your house. But those lights specifically, I don't know. I would imagine that they probably do have a lot of EMFs.
Carrie, you got any idea on those?
Yeah, they put out a very strong field. And let's mention just briefly about meters, what he's our friend is saying about the high schools there. I mean, that is really outrageous. The kids must be feeling the effects of that. The problem is people don't know how to connect the dots, so that when they're out there, somebody may be getting dizzy spells, even cardiac effects, so they don't know how to connect them with that. But just briefly, we need to be clear here that if you're going to get a meter to test the microwaves from the cell towers, antennas, your cordless phones, the wireless devices, you need an RF meter. Now, if you're going to be testing the fields from those ballasts and from plugged-in electrical appliances, you need a Gauss meter. And it's really important. This is detailed in the book. We don't need to be technical experts, but we really need to be clear with this. And also, David's right about the compact fluorescence and how they do create this dirty electricity back into the system. So one of the things you can do to reduce your exposure in your home is go back to the incandescent lights. You can still find them. I know the compact fluorescents are good in terms of energy consumption. They do, however, not huge amounts, but they do put off small levels of radio frequency radiation, and we don't need any more of that.
Okay, and we have a very patient caller. Joan, good morning.
Hi. Can these cell towers that are up now, can you tell me if they can be taken apart and taken down? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Well, they can be taken down. There have been, well, in Taiwan, I know they've taken down about 1,500 of these towers.
Why have they taken them down? For health reasons?
For their proximity to schools and neighborhoods. The problem is that these are long-term leases, generally, and the telecoms are protected for the moment by the Telecommunications Act, which prohibits questioning health effects, or actually it's written as environmental effects, but it means health effects. You can't question health effects as a reason for locating a cell tower. So
wait a minute.
That it's on like, its face is unconstitutional.
It's written into the law that you can't challenge a cell tower based on health effects?
Right. But you can, in terms of
you
aesthetics.
You can challenge it.
Well, yeah, you can challenge it, and our city council should be challenging it. They're doing very little on our behalf. Other cities in the country are enacting very stringent rules on locating these towers, and they will probably go to court, and that's what should be done. But Intel is located here, and I think that they don't want to step on Intel's $5 billion investment in WiMAX in Clear here. I just want to take a second to plug our group, which is called Mount Tabor Facts, Families Against Cell Towers Near Schools. And this is not just about our school. It's about all schools and all neighborhoods. And we have a website, notabortower.com. This weekend we're going to, or not this weekend, next Sunday we're going to be screening the movie Full Signal at Tabor Space.
Okay, and you have some DVDs here that we're going to have up at the front desk. If somebody, if you want to just drop by, they're here. There's a limited number of them, but David's just kindly giving them away. And tell us a little bit about what's on these DVDs.
Well, this is a good overview. Actually, it's I like it better than Full Signal. It was done by a woman, Libby Kelly, I think she was behind it. She's with the International Center for Electromagnetic Safety, and it's called Public Exposure. It's available on YouTube, and it's just a good overview of the whole wireless. It was done more than 10 years ago. It starts with a showing that in Marin, there's the highest, Marin, California, there's the highest breast cancer rate, and they relate that to the number of cell towers and radar stations in the area.
Okay. Okay. We have one more caller. No. Okay. So, Carrie, one of the things that we had talked about earlier was that these cell towers, when people are talking about them in the health industry or people, regulators come in, they say, well, they're giving off radiation that's well below what the guidelines are. But the guidelines vary greatly from place to place, don't they?
Well, not really, because they're set nationally and internationally. And I don't want to give you a long discourse on this because I really want to get to the steps that people can take to reduce exposure in their homes while they're fighting these towers in the schools, et cetera. But the technology is, as one caller said, wasn't pre-market tested for safety. And the guidelines they use is what's called thermal. In other words, if this radiation is not hot enough to heat human tissue, it was considered safe. So when they put these regs in place, and I think in the U.S. they were last updated in 96 or 98, they didn't consider the non-thermal biological effects. So all the things that David and I have been listing, from the DNA damage, cognitive effects, you know, leakage of the blood-brain barrier, all of these biological effects happen at the non-thermal, very low levels. And so that's why there's a great concern and why we need to really look to reducing exposure wherever we can. And you can reduce a lot in your own home.
Okay, we're going to go to one more caller. Good morning, Sequoia.
Hi, good morning. I have a question. I don't know if any of either one of your guests or you've heard about it, but remember the kids at the high school that suffered arrest or a heart attack about a week ago or 2 weeks ago at a high school?
Was that here in Portland?
Yeah, that was here in Portland. If you look it up, it might be on Oregon Live, but it happened about a week ago. And the kid, while playing football, suffered a heart attack. And a nurse that happened to be at the game, at the football game that he was playing, revived him. And so I was just wondering, could that be a possibility? I mean, this is a high school kid, you know, that was... that was just playing football, and I'm hearing you guys saying that they're building these cell towers, and one of your guests, the lady, she just said, made a point that...
Yeah, it could be hard exposure.
So, yeah, the radiation could affect, could put someone in a cardiac arrest, so is that a possibility?
There actually was another school where there were two instances of this that happened.
One happened in Texas.
Yeah, and it's being speculated that that could have had something to do with it, yeah.
But there's probably no
right, it would be
evidence.
Very difficult to...
And at this point, that would be a lot of speculation. Okay, well,
yeah, certainly lots of, you know, these tragedies have happened before, but one of the contributors to wireless radiation rescue is a cardiologist. And he explained that, you know, the heart, I mean, if you think of it, is electrical in nature. And so what he has told us is that it's particularly vulnerable to the electromagnetic fields and radiation. And he said with so-called unexplained cardiac symptoms, the first thing he looks for now is wireless radiation exposure.
Mm. Okay.
So is there a possibility that, that's what happened to the kid that that was playing football for a Portland high school?
There is a possibility. We obviously need more research in terms of the cardiac effects, but those are fairly easy to demonstrate. It's not like you have to wait, you know, the 10 or 20 years for the brain cancers to develop. The cardiac effects are immediate. I really encourage the parents to get together. It's not terribly expensive to buy a good RF meter. You need to take the measurements in those fields and those schools. Never underestimate the power of a parent. And you can go to them with these readings. I encourage you to go to our website, radiationrescue.org. And also, David, I'd like to give you, I don't know if you have a copy of our book, but I'd like to give you one. There's a lot of useful information.
Thank you.
So okay. If you go to the website, the contact form, just send me your address, and I'll send you a couple of copies.
All right, let's go over some of the steps we can take in our homes to make them a little bit safer.
Well, what I would like to say is we mustn't abandon this fight. We mustn't abandon talking to the school board, everything we're doing, the community, the city council, your local representatives. But while we're doing that, we really need to look at the exposure in our homes. And I don't know if I'm going to rate these. It depends on, you know, what devices you have. But as we mentioned, the cordless phones, the 2.4, 5.8, 6.0, put those away somewhere. If you have to have one, keep it as far away from a living space as you can. Go back to corded landlines. Go back to your Ethernet hardwired Internet access, and at least put that router far away and be sure that you turn it off at night.
When you say far away, what kind of distances are you talking about?
Well, 25 feet.
Okay.
From where you sit and where you sleep, maybe in the garage or the basement or somewhere. But the best is put it on a power cable, and they're ones that have timers. So ideally, you don't have a router, a wireless router at home at all or in your workplace, but that you turn it on, that you have the Ethernet. But if you have to have a wireless router, just turn it on when you need it, and please make sure you turn it off at night.
A timer is a good idea. It'd automatically go off and automatically come on.
Well, one of the functions of sleep is to heal and repair the immune system, and this wireless radiation has been shown to suppress immune function. So you particularly don't want it on at night. There's a whole list of safer ways to use a cell phone. There is, to date, no safe cell phone, and there's no safe use. What we can do is reduce the level of hazard, and the wireless in-the-ear headsets are not the answer.
So the Bluetooth stuff won't help?
In fact, in some situations, it could actually increase your exposure. It's there all the time, and you can pick up ambient levels of radiation. As we all know, those are high, the background levels. The best is there's also something called a SAR rating, that is just briefly is the relative level of the radiation emission from a cell phone. Go back to the simpler one and use it on speakerphone. Keep it powered off. As David said, don't carry it in your hip pocket, but also don't carry it anywhere near your heart.
Okay. David?
The issue with SAR, there's actually not a dose-response relation. In some studies, lower doses of radiation have been found to be more dangerous, and it just sort of lulls people into a sense of security. Now, here in Oregon, we are introducing, our state senator, Chip Shields, will be introducing the Children's Wireless Protection Act, which will require warning labels on cell phones and packaging. And there's a strong support for that right now, we're finding out in the Senate.
And also you can see in San Francisco, Mayor Newsom has done just that. And David's absolutely
That's
right
the
about
SAR bill, though. That's completely different. We're not with SAR at all. We're actually against that bill.
Okay. So, but you're right about SAR. It's not the whole answer. And it's the same thing with people who are putting chips and pendants and things. It can lull people into a sense of false safety. So a lower SAR phone isn't safe, but there is a lot of indication that you're better to use a lower-powered phone than you are a multimedia. Some of these new ones now are extremely high. Some of them are, you know, maybe getting towards thermal levels. So people also should know that the cell phone, it emits these bursts of radiation, which you probably don't feel, every 3 to 5 minutes when it's powered on.
So powering it off is a way to help, too.
Absolutely.
Okay.
I have a cell phone. I keep it powered off in the glove compartment.
All right, and we're going to go to another caller. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning. We know about WiMAX that blankets a whole city with radiation, but I heard just the tail end of something on another station saying that there's another system which is Wi-Fi on steroids. Is this something even stronger than WiMAX?
I only know about WiMAX, actually. It's been called Wi-Fi on steroids.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And
well, the new one, David, is that this is for the wireless devices.
Right.
So whether it's, a handheld PDA, a tablet, they're now getting approval to make these, the wireless from these and wireless networks stronger, more powerful, and it was called Wi-Fi on steroids.
So are you saying that something like the iPods?
iPads, you mean, with the 3G?
No, iPod.
iPod.
The smaller ones, the ones that are like just PDAs. They're not phones. Are they
well,
using?
Well, I would just say a PDA is like a BlackBerry. It's a but the iPod was initially just a music, portable mobile music. But now they're making them so they actually can go online. So the key is if anything is sending or receiving, and it's in that mode, you're being exposed.
Very good. Thank you very much.
As are everybody on the bus, train, and airplane.
Absolutely.
Well, I think that's one of the things that it's so ubiquitous now that it's difficult to see how you would get away from this. Okay, we're going to take one more caller. Dante, good morning.
Hi. Yeah, thank you for taking my call. I have two questions about my cell phone use. Well, first, an observation is that in my job, I have to have a cell phone. I have to carry it. I'm a service technician, which is kind of a bummer because I've always been concerned, very concerned about the health effects. Now, one, and you probably already mentioned this and I missed it, one, I do use a wired headset as much as I can, and so that's one question: do you think that is less harmful? And the other is, I have to tell you, I have a holster that I put on my hip, and what I've done is I took a lead fishing weight. And I pounded it out flat, so it's kind of like a flat piece of lead. And then I wrapped that in tape so I wouldn't leach any lead. And then I sewed a cloth bag around that. So I put that between my hip and the cell phone in the holster. Do you think that might be helping at all? And I can take my answer off the air. Thanks. Bye-bye.
It could be helping, but there are protective sheaths that you can buy. There's a company called Less EMF. And they have a lot of these products. Some work, some don't. There's also a headset called a blue tube, which works like a stethoscope. There's not a wire that goes up to your ear. So there's a space with air in it that apparently cuts about 97% of the radiation that would go to your head with a wired.
So, Carrie, what do you think about the lead shield?
Yes, there certainly could be a benefit there. Again, this is why it's really helpful having a meter to test some of these things. There's something called the near field, which is what you're getting from the antenna, and the most intense plume is around, 8 to 9 inches. But there's also the far field. So it's really a challenge to look at the safer use. When we did this for the book, I had a dozen experts, and we spent a long time going through the safer use of the phones and the earpieces. What they came up with is that a low, the less fancy, less bells and whistles phone used on a speakerphone, the speakerphone is better than any of the headsets. Keep it powered off whenever possible, and also this caller might look into the possibility of using a pager so that you could be alerted, and then you turn your cell phone on when you need to make a call. Don't make it inside a vehicle, if all possible, because David's right. The radiation is exacerbated within a confined metal space. So there are safer ways to use this, but essentially we need to limit the exposure.
Okay, and maybe you could just one more time give out your website and then, David, yours, so that people who want to get more information look up some of the research and some of the tips you have.
Yes, our book is called Wireless Radiation Rescue, and there is a four-point plan of people to reduce all the risks of electropollution, and the website is radiationrescue.org. And the book can be ordered from the website or online at Amazon or ordered from your local bookstore. I really encourage people, don't be disheartened. Don't give up. This technology is everywhere, but we can turn it around, and we can reduce the risks dramatically for our families.
And David?
I have an email address, wirelesswatch@yahoo.com, and if people want to get involved or participate in this local struggle in terms of pressuring our legislators, please write. And I have a website, wirelesswatchblog.com, and then notabertower.com is the website for the school.
Okay, I want to thank you both for coming on.
And
thank
I
you.
Want to thank David. David, you're terrific. Thank you so much. We need people like you.
And you too. Thank you.